Check 1, 2, 3, 4. Get a little of this thing coming too. And we're going to welcome to the Moose Turd Cafe. Getting started here in a second. I'm going to call Mike Diesel. I'm going to listen to a little eulogy to Dr. King here from none other than Robert Kennedy. Back from the dead at long last. And we'll see how it goes here. Let's see if we can. Well, is it getting it there or is it not? We got to start it again. I didn't have the. There we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm only going to talk to you just for a minute or so this evening because I have some very sad news for all of you, and I think sad news for all of our fellow citizens and people who love peace all over the world. And that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis, Tennessee. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country in greater polarization. Black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand compassion and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus, and he once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own day despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, and a feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country.
That's Robert Kennedy issuing a eulogy to on the death and the assassination of Martin Luther King, 1968. Welcome to the program. Are you there?
Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday. It's the Moose Turd Cafe with your original host and dusty footed philosophers, John Case. And it's sometimes sidekick.
Mike Diesel!
What?
Mike Diesel.
And by the way, it's I believe it's November 3rd, everybody. It's Friday. It's a little bit past the bottom of the hour. We're coming up on 7:35 a.m. in the morning, everybody.
You know, 7 November.
And by the way, the Moose Turd Cafe is not sponsored by anybody.
That is true. And we invite you all to come in and, sit down and have one of our many delicious recipes. Actually, I can't promise they're going to be. It's a relative deliciousness that we speak of here, as is
sweet,
true of all life.
We do it moderate. We do it savory. We put some heat on it. We got some umami.
Right. You know, but the main point is, though, is that and we give you a little bit of a, lard in your coffee to help get it down. But plus some spicy cinnamon from Dr. Lecter's inimitable catalog of flavors, so we just say.
Hey, by the way, where'd you get the coconuts?
Well.
Coconuts is tropical. This is a temperate zone.
I got them off the cocoa.
Are you saying that, look, it's a simple question of weight ratios, okay?
A cocoa.
A 4-ounce bird cannot carry a 2-pound coconut 8,000 miles. That's all I'm saying.
Well, a coconut with a coca. However, a coca bird that has coconuts can.
I have a coca bunch of lovely nuts. Goodbye, everyone.
Coca bird. That's what they used to tell you about cocaine, right? You know?
It would appear that I my second statement before the Senate committee was not exactly correct. I may have fibbed just a little bit. I may have not said the whole truth.
Senator Sessions, there's a rope waiting for you.
We're scary. It's just that African-American woman was so intimidating. I got nervous.
I know. Here's what's going to happen to you, Senator Sessions.
And that big-headed Al Franken is... He's
scary, isn't he?
He's very frightening.
I know. He's very... It's all very frightening. I know.
I got
guess what's... Guess how it's going to end up, Senator Sessions.
I'm not sure.
You're going to get to the Supreme Court, but by the time you get there, you're going to be 9... women on the Supreme Court.
I'm going to hang up now.
And they're going to render a judgment.
Wow. Rendering a judgment is very much like rendering down moose fat.
and
Senator, we're not arduous, but eventually we get there.
In Senator Sessions' case, I think that's probably going to be true to form. We'll have to consult our renderer, Dr. Lecter, to see whether.
I don't know where he is. It's, I just heard a bunch of noise in the shed.
Don't go there. That's right.
I'm not going back there. I think I heard a chainsaw, and it's a little disturbing for my neighbors. It doesn't bother me much because I get up early. So, but man, just a chainsaw, and then it sounded like a bone saw, and then a grinder, and just all kind of lights were coming on and off, and I heard a bunch of cackling, and and I can't find Marcus. He left.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my dragon he's gone. He cloaked and got the hell out of here.
Well, so this morning, I call Carol, around, we talk around 5 o'clock in the morning, okay? And so she tells me that don't look at the news yet. She's looking at it because she knows that sometimes I look at the news early and I go into a apoplectic,
downward
tirade of some kind, and we can't even listen to NPR because they have Steve Inskeep on there, and I can't stand him when I get in a bad mood. And she won't even, and she knows that if she doesn't filter it out, that I won't even be able to listen to the news at all.
Yeah, it's
so she told me, though, that this morning was not, so far. But I'm trusting her now, okay? Will the GOP plan lift the economy? Views are split. Now, why would you even have a headline like that?
Yeah, views are split. Yeah.
Split by what?
The nominal tax rate is 35%. We're going to cut it to 20 when the majority of the corporations average out to pay almost 18. So shut up.
Actually, the average is
shut
closer.
Up, you ass.
Actually, the effective rate is closer to 14.
Yeah, Yeah, I know. I'm saying what they do is they take the top 100 and they average them out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, the necessary thing would be to take the top 15, and that's where you get way down to 14.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah, right.
Yeah,
okay, that makes sense.
So they like to add those other ones in there to go, see, we're getting killed, man. You haven't paid your fair share of taxes in 30 years. Shut up.
I know. They don't want to pay any.
No.
I mean, what public services do they need besides the military?
Why should I have to pay for that? Well, there's a little thing called roads and bridges and trains.
Well, we have to. Military has to go all over the world protecting the freedom to invest.
Capitalism. You're over Northquist.
I know. It makes you just want to barf.
But give me while I Friday rich. Friday rich party, everybody.
Well, we have a nice row going on here in Jefferson County over the plaque by the Daughters of the American Revolution honoring the slave owners.
I did not make it over. I apologize for not being able to make it over to the protest yesterday in front of the courthouse there.
I haven't made it to a protest recently in a month. I mean, I've been staying here. I've got to tell you.
Well, you also got sick, and you got
I did get
better.
Sick for a while, but now I need to go out.
I think we might be doing a little bit of service here with this.
Yeah, we're helping out. We're getting some. I think people we're lightening a few, you know, loads. You know, I think that's a service to a certain extent. I mean, we still need to go out and. I mean, I still need to present, you know. I understand, you know, but still, we're trying to, you know, and it suits my mood. The Moose Turd Cafe, it does. I mean, I really do.
It suits my mood as well. It does.
May I say something?
Yeah, please, Dr. Lecter. I'm so glad that you've joined us.
I wanted to mention that
I wouldn't call them compliments,
the spice that I'm using is not necessarily considered cinnamon across the globe.
Oh, I see. Okay, I was using it as a metaphor for possibly. Some other, you know, salty flavors.
Man, I just got the chills.
He is chilly. He's a chilly dude.
Hey, by the way, congratulations to one Davey Martinez for becoming the new manager of the Washington Nationals. Good luck with that, Davey.
Now, what do you know about Davey?
He was a really, really excellent ball player. I think he spent his last 4 years with the Montreal Expos, which are now the Washington Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
They moved from Montreal because they couldn't get things straightened out up here, and they brought a baseball team to D.C., which was without a baseball team for a lot of years, and you know, he's saying all the right things in his press conference. He's not a he emphasized the fact that he's not a guy that sits in the office. Joe Madden brought him to Tampa in spring training, I think, in 2008, and he came to spring training. He had kind of said, well, I'm going to spend more time with my family, and his family was like, listen, Dad. You're a baseball guy.
Yeah, you're no fun at home. You know,
it's not that he's no fun at home. It's just that they have this structure, and a lot of families go through that, where you know it's this way, and he's everybody has grown accustomed to it being that way, and he decided that he went to be the bench coach, and that year the Tampa Bay Rays made it all the way to the World Series. He got a taste of what management is like. He really enjoyed it. He had stayed with Joe until Joe went to Chicago, and he went to Chicago with Joe, and he was considered by many people in baseball experts, to be on a short list for one of the next young managers that could take over a team. And I think probably, and he has a relationship with Mike Rizzo, the general manager of the Washington Nationals, and he's known him for quite some time, and Davey has had some experience, but not, as a skipper, not as a, and that's a different, we'll see. The last time the Nationals did this with was Matt Williams, and we all know how that worked out. Not well. So, I mean, he got, as opposed to the majority, I think the last two managers were given two-year deals. Davey was given a three-year deal. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting. So I'm certain, you know, one of the things that I've seen that's pretty, might be a stark contrast to what you've seen in Washington Nationals uniforms, is a lot of guys get rotated in and out of the outfield and the infield. And that is not something that a traditional manager like Dusty Baker will do. Joe Maddon certainly had no problem winning a World Series doing that, and going to a World Series doing that. He, you know,
all right, so okay,
you know, like a backup first baseman will occasionally go in the game if he feels as if somebody is not worth their salt today. Let me rotate another guy in, say in the fourth inning, and get him in at left field. And then that guy he'll do a double or triple switch and move that guy back to his backup position at first, and somebody else will come in at left field. It's a rotation thing that, you know, I don't know if it's the best thing in the world, but it certainly has, we've seen it more and more in this type of baseball.
That's interesting. I had no awareness of that whatsoever. So that, you know, that's interesting. Yeah.
Well, it's going to get interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, well,
I mean, I can't imagine Bryce Harper, you know, playing second base or third, but hey.
I know he's a pretty skilled fielder. He could probably adapt. You know.
Yeah, he's a skilled outfielder because he has a cannon.
You mean in his arm?
He has a really strong arm, and he's an accurate thrower. I mean, they put the gun on his arm. They calculated the speed, and one throw I think was 98.7 miles an hour.
Wow. Wow. Now he must do a bunch of exercises dedicated in part to making that happen, right? I mean,
all he does. Keep in mind, I mean, when he was 12 years old, he packed stadiums as a pitcher.
Really?
Oh yeah, he was a pitcher. He was a catcher. Yeah, Bryce was played a lot of different positions.
So he's a baseball player.
God, yeah, damn good one too.
He's very good.
We're probably going to lose him, I would say.
You think he's unhappy with the switchover and stuff? He had he liked the relationship with Dusty. So
I don't think he was pleased. You know, a lot of guys weren't, and I think he's looking at the prospect of going through an entire season without his buddy Jason Worth, who was, you know, the heart and soul of the Nationals. He was booed a lot the first year, you know, he was injured first year or two, and you know, he got a 7-year contract worth $140 million. And you know, not a lot of guys were getting long-term deals at that time. He was part of the team that the Philadelphia Phillies that won the World Series before he came to Washington, and then he came to Washington, and he kind of changed the culture. He, you know, kind of brought some of these young guys along and taught them how to be ball players. Although, you know, Jason didn't come to the table without his faults. He was caught driving his car drunk in excess of 115 miles an hour on 95.
Well, look, he's a ball player.
But here's the thing. He copped to it immediately. Took his punishment and went to jail. He went to jail for 4 days.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, and then when he came out, he made some serious changes in his life, diet-wise and the way he conducted himself. And he's actually really, really, it's fascinating. He is a organic farmer.
Yeah.
He and his wife own an organic farm in the Midwest, and he goes and speaks at organic farming events. you know, both hydroponic and other applications of farming, and he talks about it, and he's very interested in it, and he talked about preparing for life after baseball. And one of the things that he is very much interested in is stopping this grab ass of all the seeds.
The loss of heirloom seeds and stuff. And
right.
All
of, you mean, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. He's very much interested in farmers being able to keep the rights to their seeds.
The rights to their seeds.
Right. Exactly.
Now, what does that do about Monsanto's rights to its?
To continue to dominate. I don't know.
I see. It's really complicated, that stuff, to me.
It is. I mean, genetically, that's a whole different.
Well, the whole concept of intellectual property. I mean, it somehow. It doesn't work the same way as, you know, physical property in subtle ways, you know. I mean, you would think that, oh, gee, I mean, as long as it's legally the same, you'd be able to do the same thing. But it just, it doesn't work quite that way.
Well, you know, everything from engines to software to poetry to music to whatever. I mean,
what was software, for example? I mean, the big problem is you can steal it.
Oh, easily.
And you can copy it for nothing, or nearly nothing.
Now, yeah.
And so, I mean, now you can't do that with a hammer. I mean, to do that, you got to manufacture another hammer in order to do that.
Well, if you have a printer, that's a...
Well, that's the problem is, but the intellectual property, the...
You know what, John? I am really tired of you. I'm just going to print another version.
Yeah, that's true. Right. I know, you know,
I have all this sauce, genetics material that I'm going to throw into my 3D printer.
I wonder if Dr. Lecter is composing a, you know, I know he likes to, you know, take them apart and eat them, but how would he like to take the parts and put them back? It's that problem that Khrushchev had about, what about the machine where you put a sausage in one end and you get to pick out the other?
Right, exactly. Can we reverse?
Can we do this, you know? I don't know. 3D, 4D, 4D printing. That's what we call it. Hey, I caught my wife in bed with another man. No. They were just doing 4D printing.
Yes. Actually, the other man was you. She was busy with the printer this morning.
Yeah, right.
It was a much younger version of you that could go longer.
Right. I'm a fugue fucker.
Oh. Oh, John, the children. John's like, yeah, fuck them.
I couldn't resist the fugue thing, you know.
All right, that's our allotment of the F word.
Okay, right. Okay, we'll go by. Sorry, kids. Don't tell your parents.
Don't tell your parents
that we said that. Okay, just leave that out when you tell them about the rest of the show. Okay, they won't appreciate that.
No.
Anyway.
certainly they're excited about their new tax plan. That's for sure.
Yeah. What do you mean there's a split in the only economist you can get to say it's going to create jobs is one that's been paid to say so.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, good God. It's the same flim-flam that's been going on, you know, since Nixon and Reagan.
Yeah.
Reagan, really, you know, and he did it.
And, you know, they keep pulling out this old video of JFK talking about cutting, you know, the Thompson tax rate. And the reality was that tax rate was repackaged. You know, and yes, it was cut.
But yeah, it was cut from 90%. It was sitting at 90%.
And think about the amount of factories that were in the United States and produce and what we were producing. And
well, look, I mean, there was the coming out of the Roosevelt era, okay, of the New Deal. I mean, you did have a philosophy which said what is shared prosperity? Shared prosperity is, well, if the economy goes up 1%, everybody should go up 1%. Or at least at the median, it should go up 1%. Okay, and you know, I mean, and that was happening from about 19. Well, from the end of the war all the way through 72, 73. That was happening. You know, there was, it was not even growth. It was not even, but at the median, which means that, you know, basically trade, basically collective bargaining was still powerful enough to affect the overall wage trends, okay, especially the automobile industry. When Walter Reuther got 3% plus the cost of living, 3% for productivity plus the cost of, man, I want to tell you, that was a powerful contract settlement, and that set a pattern that lasted, I would say, 20 years, you know. And
they sliced and diced it for the next 50.
Well, no, they just made it as illegal. They finally just, you know, took apart the big automobile plants and moved them around the world. They moved everything around the world. They, you know, and they did, and then they did everything they could possibly do to make it legal to fire people for organizing. And that's where they're at now. You know, you can't win a big private campaign now.
They think they continue to suggest that coconuts migrate.
Well, you know, I mean, there's, you know, the whole thing about collective bargaining, I mean, remember, what was collective? Why did Franklin Roosevelt support collective bargaining? Okay, because he feared class war and the rise of Bolshevism, okay, in the United States. That's why, okay? He says, if we can't have a legal system to manage, you know, this conflict over income, you know, and these big giant corporations and manufacturing, mostly at the time, then he says we can't. You can't manage anything if you can't manage that. Okay, and you know, you look around the world from 1917 to 20 to the end of the war. You know, yeah, I mean, you had a huge conflict going on in a lot of these countries, and it was happening here too. Okay, I mean, because the conditions in these mass manufacturing factories without organization was intolerable.
Right. There's no question about that.
You know, I mean, it just got to be, you know, you know, and so you had a really a big upheaval.
I mean, you had so much in a short period of time establishing, you know, everything from establishing, you know, a work day, a work week, you know, a 5-day work week, overtime, workers' comp, you know, hourly wages, child labor laws.
Right.
In that entire mix of that time period, things were established that were really good.
Oh, yeah.
Really, you know, good quality things that people really died for.
But since 73, the distribution has just gone. I mean, you know, basically the share of income that, you know, the median, median is what? That's around 50,000 or 48 now, something like that. Okay. I mean, so the share of income the median would have is now, hasn't changed, has been flat ever since 73.
Right. I mean, even
all the growth since then has gone to the top. You know, 1%.
Piketty at one point had indicated that he felt as if the hourly wage should be somewhere over $20 an hour.
Oh, yeah, it should. Oh, absolutely. If you'd kept on the track that you were on then, yes, that's what it would be. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, millions of dollars in accumulated earnings.
And Jared Bernstein has said this a number of times.
Yeah, I mean, this is well known. And the question is, though, how do you get back to how do you get back to that? I mean, you know, in other words, you have to. I don't know of any other way besides a form of, you know, institutionalized collective bargaining that where you could do it. I don't see how. And a certain tax policy that favored corporations that moved in that direction. For example, it's, you know, if you required, as we almost did, but now it's gone, I guess, corporations to report their median salary, okay. Well, then you could say, hey, you know, your profits went up, you know, 10%. Your wages didn't go up at all. You know, you don't get the best tax deal. The best tax deal goes to those where, hey, your profits went up 5% and everybody's income went up 5% too.
Don't we also, too, I think there's a little bit of interest in, you know, from me is changing the meaning of a corporation, changing the definition.
Well, I think changing how it's governed. Especially the big ones. I mean, I don't know about little ones, but big ones for sure, you know. Yeah, you got to change. There has to be some public and employee accountability at the top.
Sure. Sure, that has to be represented, and it's not. And it continues to not be, and that's where we find ourselves. And it's unfortunate.
I don't know. That's a tough problem to solve right there. I mean, the hardest part is probably not, you know, writing the right rule or the right law or the right tax policy. The hard problem is taking over the government with people who would be willing to write such a policy.
By the way, everybody, we're up on the top of the hour, 7 a.m. here on November 3rd, Friday, here at the Mr. Cafe with your host and original Dusty Booted philosopher, Mr. John Case, and his sometimes sidekick,
Mike Diesel.
That guy.
Diesel the Mike. Yeah. Well, Mike, you know, I'm persuaded as we move forward here that you know, the answer to all my questions is in revolution. And you know, I think 7 November we're coming up on it was the date that V for Vendetta, you know, tore apart Britain, British fascism again. And so we're coming up here on, I'm hoping that 7 November will, you know, cosmically, you know, Mr. Mueller will continue his indictments. I think we need a mass Washington demonstration in support of Mr. Mueller before they start threatening to fire him.
Well, they already are. It's, I don't believe anything that comes out of Orange Man's mouth. Nothing.
Yeah, right. No, right. That's
and, right. And I'm starting to not believe anything that comes out of Paul Ryan's mouth. Because, you know, I don't want to get all wonky on you. I have to go to the gym.
I have to go to the bathroom, yeah, right.
I have to go to the gym and then cash my money from my shareholders. I mean, contributors.
Everybody's got a piece of me. You know, mm-hmm. You know, all the right people got a piece of me. You like a piece of me? You know,
you got some. You know, Peter King was basically very much pushing back against this awful tax plan.
Was he?
Yes, very much so. There are people that this is going to affect that are lifelong Republicans, and it's going to affect them in a very, very negative way.
Well, anybody that's hooked up in the real estate industry, the mortgage, the cuts, the sort of assault on the mortgage deduction, that's going to bother them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the builders already, you know, American Builders came out, you know, CEO of American Builders came out against
right.
it.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
You're going to have other folks, you know, get in line. This isn't a layup. This isn't a slam dunk. This is really going to get contentious. And
good.
And that's a good thing. It should be contentious because it is a big, ginormous bowl of refried donkey shit.
Yeah, that's, we ought to have you know, the tax bill armlet, you know, front and center here at the cafe, I believe. You know, you come in, a tax bill omelet. Yeah, we're going to give one to Governor Injustice here. Just here, eat this. Eat this. I got chopped up little monkey feet in here, buddy. Come on.
You know me, I done did it.
Yeah,
right now.
Well, take a pipe, take a slice of this omelet, buddy. Oh, you won't believe it. Yes.
Tax restructuring in the history of this country, and it's gonna make businesses more successful and like my own, because you know I done did it.
Yeah, right. You're a, what a fat pile of lard.
I can't get my leg up.
Jesus.
Hold on.
You know, I wish Dr. Rectum would render you.
Hold on a minute, son. Let me just take a deep breath. I got.
Thank God, Jesus! You know, the the best part of Mr. Injustice's appearance is the fact that he chokes to death at the end of or falls asleep
every single time. He seems to, but
He can't eat what he produces. He know he's laying out all this, you know, shit, and we serve him up, you know, an omelet, the tax bill omelet, and he can't swallow it.
His heart stops and starts again. It's amazing. If he has one.
Right. He's like, you know, the old man of the mountain. Remember the old man of the mountain in New Hampshire and his nose fell off?
That's a... And I'll applaud, because history is going to look kindly on Senator Franken's questioning of the Attorney General. You said four different things. And none of them were consistent. So for first you came out and you said no meetings, and then all of a sudden there were meetings. However, those meetings didn't involve talking about the campaign. And then there was meetings that involved talking about the campaign. So you're going to need to come back in front of the committee
and explain these, you know, the flip-flops.
Because I'm a giant of the Senate.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you are too, Senator Franken.
That was meant to be
a joke.
Kind of a joke.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know.
Yeah, well, the problem is
okay, now, the problem with running for president, the problem with running for president, Senator Franken, and although I'm a big supporter of you.
I'm not going to.
No, I know you're not. I know, but one of the problems is that.
That's not.
Do Americans understand jokes anymore?
No.
See, that would be a liability, because you're a funny guy. You are a very funny guy. You know,
but, I think I left that life, though.
You're a serious guy and a funny guy.
I take my job as a senator from Minnesota, and there's a lot of good people that voted for me. I take that very seriously.
No, I'm glad that you do, sir.
However, I cannot take the... I'm probably going to say something that's going to be in trouble. I can't take the bullshit from the other side. I got to go because I got a morning staff meeting.
Okay. All right, buddy.
And thanks a lot, Bob. Isn't that your name?
No. My name is John, and your name is Al Franken.
Why would you? Can I call you Bob? Would that be all right?
You can call me whatever you want.
All right.
Just don't call me Henry. Don't call me Henry. I don't want to be called Henry.
What's the name of this?
So the Moose Turd Cafe, you know, just
all
come
right,
in anytime.
Well, I gotta go. Bye.
All right, bye. Man, I want him to run for president.
That was fun. Well, there is some talk I read. Somebody put Steyer and Franken. Tom Steyer and Franken. What about this Henry thing? My nephew's name is Henry. Now stop that.
I don't know. I can't stand him. Just don't call me Henry.
His name is Henry, and he's a good kid.
So I think the Hollies had a rock and roll hit at one point called "Don't Call Me Henry," or maybe it was the Bollies.
Well, yes, I.
Or the Collies. It could have been the Collies. There were lots of groups. The Beautiful Collies. Lassie, come home. Lassie, did you ever watch Lassie way back? Are you too young? Are you too young to have watched Lassie?
I remember Lassie, for God's sakes.
How about Ren 10-10? You remember
that?
Yes,
I remember Ren 10-10, and it was before my time, but I remember people talking fondly about it. So, yes. So anyway. What do you mean? Timmy trapped in the well.
How about Old Yeller? That was a tough one.
That's what everyone says.
You know. Sometimes, you know, your best friend lays down his life for you. You know, it's like Jesus did for all of us, as so we're told.
Yeah.
I don't mean to. You know, it just goes cosmic with me, and then we can head over to Moses if we want to as well. But
oh, stop it!
That's the thing about a cafe meal. You know, you start thinking about the stars, you know, almost immediately.
You mean the stars you're going to see after you eat it? Is that?
Well, you see, you know, you, the stars become immense for some reason. I don't know. It's like the, you know.
Why does Jim Morrison in The Doors Break On Through to the Other Side keep hitting me in that?
Because, well, it's similar, you know. It's like William Blake's
Break On Through!
To the Other Side, yeah.
By the way, that was an actual Jim Morrison lyric. It's written down in a notebook. It's kind of like Dave Matthews going.
Nobody gets out of here alive.
Dave Matthews, that he sang that in a song, several songs actually. You can hear him go. What? Is there supposed to be a word there, Dave? Put him and Morrison together.
Hey, I saw Jim Morrison twice. You know, I saw him once in Los Angeles, and he was great. And I saw him in Cleveland, and he was drunk. He could barely do the show at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Everyone had said, as the this is the end, my only friend. Yeah. As it came, he was less and less effective.
He was from South Arlington, went to Wakefield High School.
He did.
Yeah, I think so. Came from one of those Navy families.
Yes.
I think my parents knew his parents. They did, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
That's fascinating. Listen, more incomprehensible facts here at the Moose Turd Cafe.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Well, there was, you know, I mean, you know, you had the Washington Golf and Country Club crowd, you know, which was the white lawyers and white Protestant lawyers.
Do you realize that more than 70% of the people who would hear this probably don't even know who the hell Jim Morrison is?
The Doors. Oh yeah. Well, he's, you know, I mean, he's it, man. You know, he's just an icon of the
60s. I loved that music when I was a kid when I first heard it.
Me too. Oh, absolutely.
I jumping around like a nut.
You know, I'm thinking of putting on a Jim Morrison fiesta right after this program. Actually, I mean, you know. You're getting me sort of wound up, man, here.
Sister's looking at me like, what the hell is wrong with this child? I'm like,
yeah, break on. No, he was great. I mean, he had a self-destructive streak, obviously.
Back in the age of the 8-track, baby. The 8-track tape.
But Jim Morrison and the Doors, some of their the performance I saw in L.A. was unbelievable. It was just, he was on it, the band was great. They had there were some great performers. The keyboard guy, what was his name? I should know. He's just unbelievable, as well as the guitar man.
Oh, you're more musically inclined than I. You are a musician.
But not really. But,
I am not. I am the furthest thing. I have been called a frustrated drummer, but
yeah.
I can't even play.
Well, they were just great, you know. They came on, and but I mean, he just went. You know, if he came, I don't know anything about his family. I think my parents knew them from just casually because they used to do this club circuit, the Army Navy Country Club in Washington Golf, right? And there was a couple of others. You know, they were like the if you were, you know, the officers, you know, and the armed forces, or whatever, you know, you join one of these clubs, right? And that's where you had, you know, and then you'd play these tournaments, whether it was bridge or cards or golf or tennis or whatever, right? Or swimming meets, you know, between each other, right? So you could have a whole bunch of white people that could just hang out with each other,
yeah.
Running the country. And,
we know the power group. Okay?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, so I mean, he came from. I think his father was a naval officer, and you know, but I remember. You know, it was the 50s. That whole thing. It was just smothering. You know, I mean, I remember that culture as like something. You know, you could barely breathe in it. And if you wanted to sort of drive through it and compete in that sort of, you know, milieu, you know, I mean, you had to look forward to basically, you would have to have a Moose Turd Cafe open every single morning.
Saturday's Fridays and Sundays.
Because you would learn to love it. You know, I mean, you go to someone's rich person's house and say, "Well," and you say, "Why are you eating that shit?" He says, "Shit tastes great, man." If you're really rich, you understand that.
Hey, look, Dennis, there's some lovely filth over here.
Yeah, right. That's right.
I am your king. Why? Just because some watery tart through your butter knife, you're going to run around calling yourself king?
You know, if you put enough gin in something, anything is consumable, I suppose.
Yes.
Maybe that's something we should tell Dr. Lecter. He probably has another alternative, but, you know.
I'm certain. I don't know how there's so many different seasonings and flavors, but I don't even question it. I just try to...
talk about Indian food, man. We're talking about, Hades food.
Indian food is spectacular. It is absolutely delicious and healthy.
We're talking about the kind of food that Demeter would serve you in wintertime. Remember, Demeter
was... This is the only place, son. This is the only deli within 1,000 miles, and this is all we got.
I think Demeter was the one that... wasn't that the one that because her daughter, Persephone, was raped by the guy across the river in darkness there?
I believe so.
He stole her, and she punished the entire world forever by saying, well, she comes back. If she comes back in spring, you guys can eat again. But when she leaves, nothing will grow. Yeah, that was the curse of winter. And so it's interesting. See, Demeter could come again. Mad about someone raping Persephone.
There's going to be hell.
Hey, I want to tell you, man, the white men are running like crazy. I'm taking some humor in it, frankly.
Oh, by the way, Riley Moore, interestingly enough, I don't know if you saw this, worked for the Podesta Group.
Yeah, he has some Russia connection, maybe. He says, no, never.
No. That's nonsense.
He's a Russian spy!
I have never, ever met this Riley Moore. I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're saying. Mr. Case, I have...
Russia!
Whoa, wait a second here.
Listen,
all right?
You don't have a name, right?
You know what? If I feel like it someday, I'll tell you what it is. Hey, Tommy, start the car!
Okay. Tommy Two Toes is driving for you?
Always. He's a good man, that Tommy. He's always on time. He's never late. He's stealthy.
Is he like the Secret Service? I mean, would he take a bullet for you?
Hey, listen. That's none of your business. I'm not talking about bullets, all right?
Talk about loyalty, man. Loyalty.
I'm talking about moving freaking product, all right?
Oh, I see. Okay.
You get in the way of moving product, eventually something will happen that you don't want to have happen. You will meet me.
Right.
I'm just saying. Eventually,
yeah.
Bad things happen to good people, Mr. Case. In fact,
right.
I don't want you to go outside in your backyard and look in your caboose. Because, you know, I may or may not have left you a little gift, is all I'm saying.
No, I see. Well, I have the red lights on back there right now.
Yeah, I noticed that. and I left quickly. So I got to get in the car now and go do a thing with a guy, all right?
All right, man. Okay. Got to do a little favor.
I got a thing with a guy, a favor for a favor.
All right, I'll see you.
He's a good man. I'm going to go. Talk to you, Bob. I'll probably talk to you on Monday, but if I don't talk to you on Monday, I'll talk to you whenever the hell I want to. Goodbye.
Yeah, all right, man. See you in Atlantic City.
Wow.
I should play Atlanta.
I don't know who's scarier, that guy or...
We should go... maybe I should call out this... Maybe just the title of this one should be Atlantic City, you know, but... Mr. Kelly. Yeah, can we... I'd like to meet you in Atlantic City.
under the boardwalk.
No, you young whippersnappers, this entire Russian thing is nonsense.
Horse.
Senator Grassley. You listen to me, Mr. Case.
Yeah, it's nonsense, huh?
You need some information that you're not privy to.
Yeah, right? I know. You're part of it.
You are part of it.
Are a Russian spy.
Yeah, stop that nonsense.
You're a spy. Where's James Bond?
Tell you, this is about Hillary Clinton's emails and uranium. Is what?
No, Hillary Clinton's emails. You keep trying to date that woman, and she keeps telling you she wants nothing to do with you. I saw you. I saw you staring at her. I saw you. You like her. I saw you.
Why would you have that? I'll freak it all. That man is awful.
He's going to be the next president, you know.
I beg to differ, sir. Good day.
Bye.
Sounded like he was going to challenge you to a duel or something.
He was. He sounded to me like he was, getting ready to do a Richard Nixon on me or something like that, you know. But yeah.
Apparently, I didn't give all the answers at the thing there with my friends, and because some of them are my friends in the Senate, and they was asking me some really hard questions, Mr. Case. I especially that African American woman who scares me. She made me nervous, and I swear I had to go to the bathroom.
Do you know whether Senator you're on the ISIS list?
I'm not a senator. I'm the attorney general.
Oh, you used to be a senator, but now you're on the ISIS list.
I'm a former senator.
You're on the. I believe that, Senator, former Senator Sessions. I believe that you should return to the Senate.
I certainly have given that some thought.
I think you should. I think you should get out while you can. Frankly,
I'm gonna go talk to someone now.
You need an escape. You need to escape.
I get real nervous on these things.
You need to get out of the limelight. You need to get out of the limelight. Yeah, right.
The name of your show. I think the name of your show is very offensive. I have to go by.
Well, here is an offense against nature. Trying to complain about offensive things. Okay.
I don't know what happened, but I think he's like a combination of a hobbit and a troll at the same time. There was some kind of intermingling, species mingling, and out it popped.
Yeah, right. Well, the third age is over.
The age of man is over. Now the age of the orcs begins.
I never understood the orc character in Tolkien. It's the one I never. They always were repugnant, but they were repugnant to a degree where it was. It suggested a racial differentiation that was impossible to comprehend. That why would such a race like orcs ever reproduce? So there's something about
they were made of rotted corpses of elves.
They were some kind of yes, I think I remember that from the Silmarillion or somewhere. But I never quite got them I wasn't sure. I mean, you got to have evil in these fantasy novels, and in these heroic things. That's important. But I don't know. He had a very interesting way of doing it. He copied a little bit of Beowulf in it. There's a little bit of Beowulf in some of the, especially in the some of the tribes and stuff. But it's interesting. Well, he was a Beowulf scholar.
We'll just go with that. Sure.
Anyway, I don't know. I'm picking up. It's like this is like nose picking, isn't it? Sort of in public, to start taking apart.
Jesus, you
taking
really
apart
are running
the
back to 9 years old, aren't you? Really
that's what it's like.
I did my show.
I've started to troubleshoot, you know, the Lord of the Rings, you know. I know he really, he should have, that was really the wrong, no, he shouldn't have done that, you know.
Can I have my stupid cereal? I did my show, Ma! Can I have my cereal now?
I know.
Goodness.
I don't want to do. You know, I'm watching TV. You know, I gotta go. You know.
Oh, by the way, hey, Jack Case, Chris Matthews here. I was about to say, hey.
Oh man, hey man, could you just could you hold up that?
Hey, John, shut up.
You're a guy that needs. You're a guy that needs a burka.
Hey, John, shut up. Hey, John, listen, John.
Okay,
I'm gonna tell you how you feel. Okay.
Oh, very important.
Because that's what I do. I tell everybody else I have them on the show, and then they say something, and I just talk over them the whole show. That's my show! Goodbye!
Yeah, why don't you wear a burqa next time, okay?
Oof.
Hey, how do you feel about burqas?
Me?
I mean, suppose we had the following thing. Suppose that, you know, we had a, you know, very diverse religious country, okay, but, you know, every religion could impose its own rules on its own members, right? So that, for example, you could have, if you wanted to have a group that wanted to have all the women or the men or whoever or the babies wear burqas all day.
A friend of mine and I wrote a parody song along.
You could do that, and then somebody else could do something different, can walk around naked all the time or whatever, if you could have
John.
All the extremes. No?
John.
What?
A friend of mine and I wrote a parody song a long time ago, and it was to the words of Baby Got Back.
Yeah.
But it was a parody of Baby Got Burka.
Baby Got Burka.
And it started with, she's got nice eyes and you cannot lie. All you other jihads can't deny. Woman walks in with her discernible waist and her veil is in your face, you get sprung. Fatima, I want to get with you. You and your sister. So. I had to throw it in there. I had to, because you were talking about
that. Right.
It just
like,
I don't know, sometimes my old comedic memory kicks in, and I'm like, hey, I remember that. Oh, that was a long time ago. We all sat around the club and laughed. Well, it was back in the day when you were allowed to laugh.
You'll be no laughing.
We have the language police.
Hey, that's an interesting thing about Trump's public persona. It doesn't have a sense of humor.
I have the greatest sense of humor ever. I have gotten more done. Okay. Lots of people tell me. Some people say I have gotten more done in 9 months than any president in history ever.
I see.
Someone needs to go have a timeout.
Yeah, where's the high chair?
A very, very long timeout.
It's yeah. I don't know. What's he?
Hey, by the way, everybody, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour here at the Booster Cafe, broadcast on enlightenedradio.org. It's your host and original Dusty for the Philosopher, Mr. John Case, and his sometimes sidekick, I forget his name, but today is November 3rd, it is Friday, everybody, so enjoy your weekend.
Right, so I'm gonna spend all morning here getting my shit together and getting this stuff up here.
Well, we started late, so we can go over a little bit.
I know, we're good, but, you know, it's... Let me just give you the headlines, okay?
Break it down.
It's going to be painful. Okay, just, you know, get ready.
Everyone, hold on to something.
I got to sneeze. Wow, that was a headline on the New York Times. I know. Headline is, House tax plan tilts toward business with sweeping cuts. Yeah, right, tilts. Turns the whole frickin' table upside down, right. What's the main lesson of listening to Sarah Huckabee Sanders? It makes Sean Spicer look better and better. Sean Spicer could be, the Sean Spicer omelet, it might be something to ask Dr. Lecter about whether we could serve that one up.
Sarah Plumpenberry Flanders.
Yeah, you know, have a little
Flanders.
Have a little slice off the back or something, you know.
Yeah, that's my next door neighbor.
Flanders. Little bacon.
Flanders.
I didn't do the bacon. I opened with Senator Kennedy this morning instead of bacon frying. You know, I hope you don't mind. But,
oh, no, that's fine. Okay. Much rather. I like bacon frying because it's very much the same consistency and sound of a moose turd frying.
Yes, practically anything frying, you know.
But
or
the smell is,
you know,
so different. It's so different.
I mean, if Dr. Electra went off and cut a slice off of Sarah Huckabee Sanders and fried it up, it'd probably sound the same thing, too.
Mr. Case.
Oh, hi, Dr. Lecter. Yes. Okay. Glad, so glad you could join us.
Why would you go inside my mind?
I don't know. I just,
how
I was.
How do you know?
Politics has become
how
such a raw affair.
How does anyone know, Mr. Case, that I haven't already prepared a slice?
Oh, good Lord. Yes. Okay. Well, then maybe on Monday we can fry that one up there.
Monday morning, you sure look fine.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, I've been reading Paul Krugman for years now, basically ever since the beginning of the Bush era. I mean, I read a book of his earlier than that when he was still only an economist. But when he became sort of the point man for the resistance to Bush, especially in the Iraq War buildup. And thereafter, but now I see he's trying to outdo himself because he's always been kind of a sharp writer.
They're doing these little snid bits that he puts up on. I don't know if you've seen them, the video snid bits where he's kind of teaching people as to what's really going on and breaking it all down very simply.
And are you talking about Robert Reich or Krugman?
Both.
Yeah,
both of them. Reich is doing one and Krugman's doing another.
Anyway, so they.
I find it interesting because Reich's is much more readily available. Krugman's is a little bit different.
Well, know what I mean? They would not be. They're not the same.
I know.
But anyway, Krugman. He's known for, you know, he's got one of the sharpest tongues in the business, right? And he's one of the sharpest debaters. I don't recommend ever trying to debate Paul Krugman in public, frankly.
I wouldn't.
He's very sharp, and
even if it's for charity, John, save yourself. Don't do it, man.
And he's very quick. Okay, so anyway, but he's kind of lost his mind a little bit. The whole circus with Trump and Paul Ryan and this entire con job on both the tax and healthcare thing.
Right.
I mean, from any kind of like point of view of scientific or intellectual or economic integrity is like it keeps boggling his mind. Okay,
right.
You know that something so stupid could be put out there for real. And but it's interesting. You see, we're beyond the era of stupid. We're into we're into another whole thing here.
The entire thing is as real as my dragon, Marcus.
Yeah. Well, but in a sense it is, because these guys are. I mean, I predict that they will enact a tax cut of some kind. How much? Who knows? But they'll do it. I mean, I just don't see how. The donors, okay, if they can't deliver on the number one item for those guys, which is taxes, it shows that this system is broken down, and you're going to see even more authoritarian initiatives start to take place, you know.
John.
Oh, Senator Sanders, thank you so much.
Excuse me, I didn't want to. Because what you're saying is absolutely spot on. What you're saying is that this is horrific for working people. This is going to set our country back 30 years. We must not let this go through. Enough is enough.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Senator Sanders.
Yes.
You know, okay, I'm. Right. You know, the guy. Right. The guy is just. You know, always. I feel better when he shows up, man. I do.
I hope to see you sometime this weekend, Mr. K.
All right, buddy. It's time to call it to a close here on the Moose Turd Cafe on the 3rd of November. 4 more days until V for Vendetta.
Yes, and 2 more days until I am 1 step closer to death. Everyone.
That's right. The weekends don't count, okay? Every day spent fishing adds a day to your life, okay? Just keep that in mind.
It's my birthday this weekend, everybody. So I hope to make it back on Monday.
All right, buddy. Okay. I have a happy one, and maybe we'll cook up something for you here. All right. Take care, man. Bye-bye. All right. That's it for today, and we will be back soon. Well, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I think I'm going to do a... Some Jim Morrison and the Doors is what I think I'm going to do. But in order to do that, we have to go find the Doors. Okay. That has to happen. And we have to turn off the tape for the Moose Turd Cafe. Which I'm going to do as soon as I get control of my mouse.